Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. This is Steven Miranda. Today is Wednesday, May 21st, 2014, and this is episode 10.02, the NFL Draft Recap Show. I got a full show today. I'll share my thoughts with you on the 2014 NFL Draft. Sky Sports News correspondent Richard Graves will be joining me also to discuss the draft and get his opinions on what happened in New York City a little earlier this month. Plus, I'll give my opinions on what the Cleveland Browns are doing with Johnny Football, and we have a couple of good old boys. Let's chomp it in! Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. Whoa! It's Godzilla, baby! It's Godzilla! yes, I've been away for a couple weeks, but folks, it's because Godzilla was in town. And when Godzilla is in town, I have got to go see Godzilla. I'm sorry. I'm not even ashamed to say that I've seen it twice already. My little one, Emma, the 7-year-old, she loved it so much that after we had seen it the first time, we were just kind of laying around on a Saturday, and she's like, let's go see Godzilla again. I was like, okay, you don't got to tell me twice. So we went, and she does this roar, and she's got this little Godzilla puppet. Go out to the website. You need to check out. We were sitting in the movie theater with her little Godzilla puppet, and it was just a lot of fun. If you have not seen Godzilla, $93 million in its first week. That was pretty impressive. As Emma says, as we're driving home from the movie theater, I wish Godzilla were my pet. And I told her, yeah, I wish Godzilla were my pet too, sweetie. So anyways, that's Godzilla for you. Complete with his roar and all the goodness that his roar provides. It was a fun movie. If you haven't been out to see Godzilla, go out and do it. Welcome back to the show. Second episode of the 10th season. A little later in the show, Richard Graves from Sky Sports and Sky Sports News is going to be joining me. We'll talk a little bit about the draft and some of his thoughts on how the Dallas Cowboys did. And before we get to my thoughts on this year's draft, first of all, I'll take a look at a little bit of NFL news. The Seattle Seahawks were at the White House today. Yeah, it's always cool when the defending Super Bowl champions head to our nation's capital to visit El Presidente. And Obama had a lot of fun with the team. Here, listen to President Obama as he introduces the team, and then he doesn't stop but give a little poke to Richard Sherman.
Let's give it up for this quiet, reserved bunch called the Seattle Seahawks. World champions. Yeah. Best football team in America. I considered letting Sherman up here to the podium today. Giving him the mic, but yeah, we got to go in a little bit. So
that's the president. You got to go a little bit. Of course, everybody knows Richard Sherman, and he can talk on the mic, so the president wasn't about to give it up. And you know what? Sherman didn't explode. He didn't explode at the president. I think some people might have thought that he might have, you know, had a shot or two at the press, but he didn't. He was good. He was reserved. The president also noticed that Marshawn Lynch, the running back of the Seattle Seahawks, didn't make the trip. And the president said this. He said, I am sorry that Marshawn's not here because I just want to say how much I admire his approach to the press. I wanted to get some tips from him. So the president knows the situation there in Seattle. Marshawn just does not like the media. He literally does not like the media. I remember back during Super Bowl week, he was just not making himself available to reporters at all. And it's just what he does. You know, he gets fined and he pays the fine and he moves on. But you know what? I'm sure the president would want some of those tips. How do you just not say, I am not going to interview with the press today? I'm sure some days the president wishes that he could do that. Next up, we'll talk about some of the first-round signings. So far, 7 first-rounders have been signed. And that sounds like a small number, but 3 of those are in the top 10. And the latest is Jake Matthews, who agreed to terms with the Atlanta Falcons. Details of how much money he's getting paid for the first 4 years of his contract have not been disclosed yet. 2 other top 10 rookies, though, the Oakland Raiders signed Khalil Mack to a 4-year, $18.67 million contract. And then the Minnesota Vikings got to work. They signed both of their first-rounders, quarterback Teddy Bridgewater, who was taken 32nd overall, as they kind of slid back into the first round. His contract details were not disclosed, but they signed Anthony Barr, who they took with the 9th pick overall. And check this out. They signed Anthony Barr to 4 years, and they're only paying him $12.75 million. And you're saying, wow, that's a little low for a top 10 pick, but it's fully guaranteed. So I think that, you know, some of the teams are getting creative. They're saying, hey, you know what? We'll only pay you this much amount of money, but every single dollar in that contract will get paid to you. It'll be fully guaranteed. I think Anthony Barr and I think some other players are going to look at that and they're going to say, hey, you know, I'll take $2, $3 million less if it's fully guaranteed. I think Anthony Barr is what he did here, because I think he could have gotten in the $15, $16 million range being a top 10 pick, but he decided, you know what, if it's going to be fully guaranteed and I'm going to get every single dollar of that, I'm going to take it. So it's an interesting contract there, interesting move by the Minnesota Vikings, and I'm extremely interested in seeing the details of the Teddy Bridgewater quarterback, the contract, the quarterback that the Vikings took at the end of the first round. So some of those first-rounders are in the books, but, you know, like I said, it's only 7 of them. My question to the other teams is, what's taking so long? What's your problem? There's a rookie salary cap in place. It shouldn't take this long for rookie deals to get done. There's just no reason for it. I mean, you should have your players signed, done, ready to be there for the day one of training camp. And you know what? The way I see it, if the Oakland Raiders can do it, and the Raiders who are in salary cap fiasco, everybody should be able to do it. And the Raiders, you know, gave up almost $20 million for 4 years to Khalil Mack, the outside linebacker. So it can be done. I'm not sure why some teams wait so long. I think maybe some of the players in the top 10, they kind of wait. They don't want to be the first ones because they want to see, hey, what is everybody else signing at? But there is a salary cap there. So it's not like you can't make the $52 million that the Sam Bradford contract got in his rookie season. I think 23 million tops maybe for the number one pick. So I just want teams to hurry along. I want to see who's going to be it. I want everybody to be at training camp, and I'm starting to anticipate training camp. I'm looking forward to hopefully making 3 or 4 different training camps this season. And I want to see everybody there. I want to see what all these rookies that we've been talking about over the last several months are going to be able to provide for their football teams. So keep looking, keep your eye out for that. More rookies still to be signed, but right now only 7 in the first round. And finally, in NFL news, I haven't played this in a while. Here it goes.
Just a good old boy.
Never meaning no harm. You know they never mean any harm, people. Beats all you ever saw, been in trouble with the law since the day he was born. We'll start in Carolina, where Pro Bowl defensive end Greg Hardy was arrested back on May 13th on a misdemeanor charge of assault on a female and communicating threats. Now, the Panthers released a statement, and all they said is, "We are very disappointed to learn of the allegations involving Greg and are concerned for all parties as we continue to investigate." Well, here's the deal, folks. Greg got arrested because he apparently, a woman that he was seeing or is seeing, filed a report that she had been physically assaulted and threatened by Hardy. The police reports state that she suffered minor injuries, some bruises and some scratches, but she didn't want any treatment. And I'm just like, they don't understand. I don't get why any man, much less a huge football player in the National Football League, feels necessary that he's got to put his hands on a woman, on anybody else, but most importantly, a woman, especially a woman that he's supposedly involved with in a relationship. I think they released Hardy on a $15,000 bond, and he also had to pay, I guess, another $2,000 for some of the threats that he supposedly gave to this woman. It's just interesting. I don't know why these players do it. If you're having a problem with the woman, just move on. Move on, Greg. It's going to be interesting how that plays out for the Carolina Panthers and what, if any, punishment either the Carolina Panthers or the league are going to give to Greg Hardy. Now we'll move all the way across the country to the West Coast and talk about Eldon Smith's problems. The great defensive player for the San Francisco 49ers, Smith pleaded no contest on charges on Wednesday to get this. Not one, not two, but three felony counts of illegal possession of an assault weapon and two misdemeanor counts of driving under the influence of alcohol. Now, yeah, if you do the math, that's five counts. Brother is trying to get his life all squared away, and it's not funny, but, you know, this was the same guy who just about a month ago got arrested at an airport because he yelled bomb or something like that because he was unhappy that he was pulled aside to be screened. Eldon Smith's got problems, folks. And his problem is that he doesn't know what to do with himself outside a football field. He's gone to rehab, and everybody thought that after the rehab he was going to be okay. But you know what? He still has issues in pleading no contest to these counts, two misdemeanor counts of DUI and three felony counts of illegal possession of an assault weapon. Pleading no contest, you're not pleading guilty, but you're not pleading not guilty either. And so I'm not sure what his punishment is going to be. I believe that, you know, he'll lawyer up and they'll do all the right things to hopefully not have him serve any jail time. But there's certainly something has to be done. The San Francisco 49ers are going to have to try and wrangle him in and try and get him the help that he needs so that he avoids the drugs and the guns and the alcohol. And come on, just get somebody to drive you when you've been drinking at a party. I don't know how many times over the last 10 years I have said that to players. Call me. Shoot. Call me. I will drive out of my way to come pick you up and take you home. For the love of all that is pure in this world, stop driving while you're drunk. Okay, that's all the good old boys we have today. But that's it. Greg Hardy, Eldon Smith. Not a lot of, you know, it's usually the off season where we got, you know, one a day, but only a couple here. So that's pretty good. That is good news for the NFL. Players are staying out of the media for bad things. And instead, they're in the media for good things. And so let's talk about the 2014 NFL Draft. Oh, my goodness. I tell you, day one of the NFL Draft, there's so much drama happening at Radio City Music Hall. People just on pins and needles. I think the NFL said over the 3 days, 43.7 million people watched the draft. Now, take a second and realize that what you are saying is 43.7 million people stopped and watched television to see who a team is going to draft coming out of college. That's, in essence, all the draft is. It's a man announcing the name of another man who's going to play a football game. That's it. And people watched it. Oh, my gosh. I remember there's a story that ESPN reached out to then-Commissioner Pete Rozelle and said, we would like to televise the draft. And Rozelle said, why? Why? Who on earth would watch that? Apparently 47.3 million of us crazy people will sit and watch and wait to see who's going to get taken where. I know that it was riveting watching Johnny Manziel sitting in the green room there at Radio City Music Hall and just wondering who was going to call his name. To which team am I going to go play football for? That is what Johnny Manziel was waiting for. And, you know, he didn't go to Houston, which I think was a mistake. And he didn't go later on to the Cleveland Browns. And it kept going, and he kept going. And then, it, you know, 10. And it's like at number three, the Jacksonville Jaguars decided, we're taking a quarterback, but it's not Manziel and it's not Bridgewater. We're going to take Blake Bortles. And everybody's like, who? Central Florida, what? What the what? And then it just keeps going, and Minnesota passed on him. And then the next thing you know, he's sitting at number 16, and it's the Dallas Cowboys. And Jerry Jones just 5 days earlier said, if Manziel's on the board when it gets to us at 16, we're going to take him. And no, they didn't take him. They did take him, which I was like mind blown when Jerry Jones showed the restraint to not take Johnny Football and all of the media circus that was surround Johnny Football coming to Dallas, and he's going to back up Tony Romo, and the first time Romo throws a pick, everybody's going to start yelling, we want Johnny, we want Johnny. He just let all of that go by, made the smart move, I guess. I'm still not 100% sure he made the right move on passing on Johnny Manziel, but he did. And then all of a sudden, the Cleveland Browns, who had already picked earlier, jumped back into the fray and draft him at 22. Wow. Take a breath. Let me just relax and say the Cleveland Browns, who passed on him earlier in the first round, remember the Cleveland Browns had the eighth pick, which they took cornerback Justin Gilbert. They passed on him there, didn't like it, and somehow they managed to jump back in at 22 right before the Kansas City Chiefs picked, and they nabbed Johnny Football. And now we could talk about everything that's going on with the Cleveland Browns and how they're saying he is the backup, and that's all fine and good and dandy. But seriously, folks, if you don't start Johnny Football, you're looking at Brian Hoyer. Now, yeah, he looked good for four games last year. Or not even three games, two or three games that he played for Cleveland last year before he got hurt. And if I'm not mistaken, he's only played four games or started four games in his past five seasons. And he's coming off an ACL surgery, right? Because that's why he didn't finish the season last year, because he tore his ACL. So everybody's going to be like, yo, can Brian Hoyer really start for Cleveland when he doesn't have all that much more experience than Johnny Manziel, and you paid quite a hefty price to get Manziel? And now it's a lot better getting him at 22 than it is getting him at number 9 or number 8 where Cleveland drafted earlier. But still, it's 22, and, you know, I'm not even going to mention that all the other quarterbacks that you've taken recently, you also took with the 22nd spot. Colt McCoy, Brandon Whedon, I don't want to throw the kibosh on Johnny Football there by saying you got drafted to the exact same spot as these other losers. Because ultimately, come on, they're what they are. That's why they're not with the football team anymore. But Johnny Manziel has a chance to be the starter. I think he needs to be the starter. I think if the Cleveland Browns want to get off to a positive note, they throw Johnny Manziel out there and they're like, go be the leader of this team. Go win some football games for us. We will try and surround you with great people. You know, they brought in Miles Austin. They got Nate Burleson. They're trying to get a cast of characters around them. Tight end Jordan Cameron was a beast last year. So there's pieces, right? I think they got running back Ben Tate. They brought him in. So there's pieces there for Johnny Manziel to be successful with the Cleveland Browns. Don't treat him like he's your backup, although right now I think he's listed in the depth chart as third string. I guarantee you that all these OTAs and all these little depth charts that are running around right now in May and June won't mean anything come September when the first game is played. And I'm going to go on record right now.
This I guarantee.
Johnny Manziel will be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns come September 7th when the season starts. Johnny Football will be out there for the Cleveland Browns. I guarantee it. I don't care what anybody in Cleveland is saying. And I don't care that Brian Hoyer is looking pretty good right now in these mini camps and OTAs. Johnny Football is the guy who will start at quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. Next, I'll focus my attention to the Houston Texans. And I guess the only question left I have for the Texans is this. Is your defense going to be good enough to keep you in striking distance in the AFC South against the Tennessee Titans and the Indianapolis Colts? And heck, even the Jacksonville Jaguars, because they finished above you last year. So it's going to be about your defense. Because when I look at that lineup right now, folks, I am not impressed. Not one little bit. They are going to battle, if nothing changes before the season starts. The Houston Texans are going to battle with quarterbacks by the name of Ryan Fitzpatrick, Case Keenum, T.J. Yates, or Tom Savage. That's right. Fitzpatrick, Keenum, Yates, or Savage. I don't know much about nothing. But I don't believe these guys are first-string quarterbacks. Fitzpatrick has had his chance at several teams, didn't cut it. Case Keenum looked questionable last season when he did play for the Browns. I mean, for the Texans. And you got to remember Arian Foster. Can he stay healthy? Andre Johnson right now talking about he's not happy. He wants to move out away from Houston. He's been in the league long enough to know that, you know, maybe it's time to move on is what he said. And as a matter of fact, Andre Johnson has gone out to say that he's been there 12 seasons. He's not going to attend mandatory OTAs and mini camps. And we'll find out next week whether he shows up to camp or not. But right now it looks like he's not going to, so he's not happy. So how good is the offense going to be? It's not going to be that good, which means that the defense, since they went out and they got Clowney, and they got Cushing, and they got SWAT J.J. Watt, those guys are going to not just have to be leaders on the football field, they're going to have to be leaders off the football field, and they're going to have to make sure that the defense does not divide from the offense, because if the offense isn't scoring any points, and it's up to the defense to not only stop the other team, but try to come up with some turnovers to generate points themselves, there might start to be some, you know, tension there in the locker room between the offensive and defensive players there for the Houston Texans. I do not like what they did. I think they were in the same position that they were just a few years ago. They went with Mario Williams route then, and now they went with the Clowney this year. Good luck to them. They didn't learn from their mistake. If Johnny Manziel goes on to have a better career than Clowney does in the National Football League, people are going to look to the Houston Texans and say, you know what? You just don't learn from your mistakes, man. You do not learn from your mistakes. And it's something that, you know, those two names are going to be tied together. Heck, if Blake Bortles, who was taken number 3 by the Jacksonville Jaguars, goes on and has a better career than Clowney, that's going to be questioned as well. So it's going to be interesting for the Houston Texans. I am looking at their schedule, and my goodness, schedule makers are not being friendly to the Houston Texans right now. It's wicked bad. It really is. It starts off a little kind of like, you know, you got the Redskins. We don't know what the Redskins are going to be like. You know, RG3, is he going to be healthy? Then they go to Oakland to play the Raiders. You know, the Raiders aren't that shabby anymore. They were in some ball games last year, so we'll see about there. Then they go up to New York to play the Giants, the Bills. They go away to play the Cowboys. Then, of course, the division rival with the Colts. They play the Steelers, Eagles. They play the Bengals and the Browns, Ravens, Jaguars twice, Titans twice, and the Steelers. It's a tough draw for the Houston Texans. Can they improve from their 2-14 and turn it around and make it, you know, 10-6 at least? I'm not sure. It's going to be a difficult task, and it's going to really fall on that offensive side of the football. And they're going to be like, they're going to have to find a way to score points because, like I said, I'm not sure that the defense looks good, but will it be good enough to mask the problems that the offense has? I'm not sure it's going to be good enough. Finally, talk about the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, I was saying they had the chance, another team, take Johnny Manziel. It was a luxury, yes. Was it a pick that they needed? No. Was it a pick that they should have made? Probably. As much as I like Tony Romo and as big as a supporter I have been for Tony Romo, the thing is, look, he's coming off two back surgeries. Brother hasn't completed a 16-game schedule in a couple years. He's getting older. What's bad about getting Johnny Manziel, sitting him on the bench, having him learn from Tony? Tony can show him ropes a little bit. And then in a year or two, he comes on the field and becomes your future. There is no future right now because the Cowboys just got Brandon Weeden, right? Didn't I just say just a few moments ago that Brandon Weeden's not the guy? Well, if that's the backup that you're going into this season because Kyle Orton decides to retire, that's not going to look good for the Dallas Cowboys. So, the questions there are, you know, they got him another offensive lineman, but can that O-line protect him? He's got, you know, he's gotten his brain knocked in over the last couple seasons. Will that offensive line finally protect him? Will they open some running holes for DeMarco Murray? They signed running back Ryan Williams this offseason. Will those running backs be able to run behind that offensive line? And finally, how about that defense? Is the defense going to get better for the Dallas Cowboys? Because as I look at it, they lost some pieces. They added DeMarcus Lawrence in the second round. They hope that he's going to be able to fill DeMarcus Ware's role there on the defensive line. But other than that, I don't see how any of the players they took in the seventh round, they took a lot of them in the seventh round, are going to step in and help this football team. So, you know, Monty Kiffin's no longer the defensive coordinator. He's still with the team. He has a role with the team. He's going to try and do it to the best of his ability. But the thing is, can Marinelli come in here and change that philosophy and get the kind of players that he wants with the speed to move around to make that a viable defense there in Dallas? I'm not sure. I'm looking at the Cowboys schedule, and I'm not sure how they do better than 8-8. They've been an 8-8 football team for years now, and I do not see right now, from what I'm seeing just on paper, how the Dallas Cowboys will do better than 8-8. Hopefully they will, but I don't see it. All right, joining me right now, good friend of the show, NFL correspondent for Sky Sports News, Richard Graves. Richard, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, it's great to be with you. It's been, what, four months or so since we were last together and saw each other in New York for the Super Bowl. A lot's happened since then, hasn't it? From this side of the pond, that a lot has happened. They say there's no off-season in the NFL. There really isn't. We've had pretty much everything from free agency to obviously everything that went down at Radio City Music Hall in New York just a week or so ago with the NFL's draft. It's been a busy period.
Yeah, the NFL, it's crazy. It somehow manages to stay in the news year-round. But you mentioned the NFL draft. Let's get right to that. What was the biggest surprise of this year's 2014 NFL draft? What do you think was the biggest surprise?
I suppose the story that made the headlines, make no mistake, it was exactly the same over here in the days leading up to the first round itself. It was all about Johnny Football, wasn't it? Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Football.
Who was going to take him? Johnny Football. I mean, I looked at various mock drafts. Every single day, somebody else was producing a different draft. And then it was sort of 24 hours before the first round itself, it was muted that he could drop as low as 16 and go to the Dallas Cowboys. Now, I've got to tell you, Steve, for one, I could not see any scenario whereby Johnny Manziel was still on the board after the first 10 picks. And when I sat here during the nighttime in the UK, obviously, the draft didn't kick off till 1 a.m. over here.
Wow.
And you saw him sliding down, and it got to the Cowboys, and you're thinking, is Jerry Jones really going to pull the trigger?
Do it!
And then he went, well, we had a conversation, didn't we? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Via text, and it got to 14, and I think the Chicago Bears were picking, and I was saying, this is it. He is going to go to the Dallas Cowboys. For Jerry Jones to sit there and not pull the trigger with Manziel on the board and all the hoopla that would go with that move was unbelievable for me. And see Manziel slide all the way to 22 before Cleveland then traded up to get him, I thought was by far and away the biggest shock of the night.
Do you think the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones made a mistake by not drafting Johnny Manziel right there in the first round? He was there for the taking. This could have been their luxury pick for the future.
Let's be honest. They don't have the luxury of taking luxury picks for the future. They've got all the money invested in Tony Romo at quarterback. The defensive side of the ball, they're riddled with holes. And whilst it might have been the pick from a marketing perspective that would have set Dallas alight, it wouldn't have been a good football move. Everyone seems to be talking about Jason Garrett being in a win-or-bust season coming up. I think you could have basically ridden off Jason Garrett as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys had Johnny Football arrived there, because how long would it have been? Do you really see Jerry sitting Manziel behind Romo? A few losses, you know what it's like over in Dallas. They'd have been crying out for him to start, and that would just undermine everything that has been done in the last couple of years in Dallas. I think from a football perspective, they did exactly the right thing by passing on Johnny Manziel.
I disagree with you, because here's what they need. You yourself just said their defense is riddled with holes. And what do they take? Zach Martin, an offensive tackle from Notre Dame. Probably the safest pick that they could have made. What happened to Jerry Jones? He went safe on me. He should, if he didn't pull the trigger on Manziel, he needed to go defense.
Did you see the footage of the war room in Dallas?
Yes, I did.
The clock started ticking down inside the final minute. And I mean, we've both watched NFL drafts for years now. And when was the last time you saw the clock with less than 60 seconds on it? You're in the Dallas war room and nobody was saying a word. Jerry Jones, if anything, was everyone was just moving their seats a little bit further away. Are you kidding me? You know he wants to pull the trigger on Johnny Manziel.
Let me just throw some names at you. If you don't go Manziel, let me just throw a couple names. There's C.J. Mosley, linebacker. Calvin Pryor. There's Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, a safety. We know we need a safety. There's so many things on the defense side of the ball that they could have done. Instead, they went offensive lineman again, to which I got angry and said, well, at that point, you should have just taken Manziel.
I hear what you're saying, but I don't think it was a bad move. Far from it, I think it was a good move. I think if Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle, had still been on the board, I don't think there's any question whatsoever the Dallas Cowboys would have taken Aaron Donald. But when you look to the defensive tackles that were left on the board, it would have been a reach for if you went to somebody like Hagerman, who was taken, I think, at the start of the second round. Anthony Barr, I heard him mentioned he was already gone. I don't think it would have been a particularly good fit for the 4-3 defense they have over there in Dallas. So you then look at who's the best man they have left on their draft board. Zach Martin, on the face of it, you look at it and say, why? Well, I'll tell you why.
Why?
He's coming towards the end of his contract. Had an okay year last year at right tackle, but the year before played well below par. Well, if that happens again this year, Zach Martin can be plugged in right there. Right from the start, I think you'll see Zach Martin plugged in at right guard anyway. And then all of a sudden, you've got enough three first-round picks all starting in it. And what do Dallas want to do with a quarterback that's had two back surgeries now? They want to keep him upright. They want to stop him from being hit. And by getting Zach Martin, that's exactly what you do. Well, that might just improve now as well.
Said some great things there, and I certainly understand the pick. I think Jerry Jones had his hands tied. Everybody there, his scouts, they all kind of pushed him away for Manziel. But I would have pulled the trigger because, as you said, you got an aging quarterback. Tony Romo's 37 years old. He's coming off two back injuries. And I support the guy. I'm a big Tony Romo supporter. But I believe it may be time to, you know, Johnny could have come in, sat a year, maybe 2 years, learned from Romo, and then taken over, and the Cowboys would have been better off in the future for it. But now we'll see what happens. We're talking to Richard Graves, NFL correspondent for Sky Sports News. So one more thing. Speaking of Tony Romo and when we're talking about him, Jason Wynn just recently said that you don't lose confidence in an elite quarterback like Tony Romo. Do you, Richard Graves, believe that the Dallas Cowboys can win a Super Bowl with Romo as the quarterback?
In an ideal world, yes, I do. I think Romo is more than good enough to lead aside to the Super Bowl. But you look at this Dallas Cowboys team, and you look on the defensive side of the ball, and even with the picks they had, what did they have, 10 picks in this last draft with all the seventh rounders they had as well? And have they really solved any problem? You know, you look at
DeMarcus Lawrence,
defensive end from Boise State they've taken to replace DeMarcus Ware. And even then, they had to trade up all the way to 34. And who did they go and trade with? A division rival Washington Redskins. And you think, is he the answer to the problems on his own? No way. They've re-signed Anthony Spencer, who, by all accounts, isn't likely to be fit even for the start of training camp in July. So, and then, like I said, they've got a cluster of seventh-round picks. They took a safety. They took another middle linebacker, obviously thinking about Sean Lee, as good as he is. He hasn't completed a season for the Dallas Cowboys. I think Rod Marinelli's got a really tough job over there. So back to your question,
yeah.
You know, lead the Dallas Cowboys to the Super Bowl. I'm not sure any quarterback can lead this current Dallas Cowboys team to the Super Bowl.
Well, there you go. Looking at the seventh-round picks, I would be hard-pressed to see any of them actually making the squad this year. I think there's a couple practice squad guys there, but I don't know if any of them make the squad. So it's going to be an interesting season for the Dallas Cowboys. But you're right. If they can keep Tony Romo upright and healthy, who knows what they can do. But the defense, you know, Kiffin's no longer the defensive coordinator.
I'll tell you what I think they were thinking when they went to the seventh-round picks. You look who they took. Ben Gardner can play in multiple positions on the defensive line. Will Smith is another outside linebacker. Ahmad Dixon, I've heard a lot of good things. He could be a sleeper in these seventh-round picks. Now, he'll have to go some to get past Barry Church and J.J. Wilcox at the safety position, but he's a big-hitting safety. Who knows? If he has a good training camp, he may well not only make the roster but be pushing for a starting position as well. But you look at people like Terrence Mitchell, Dixon, Smith. What have you got? You've got pace. What does Rod Marinelli want? He wants people who can fly around the field and close down gaps. And basically, let's not forget, Dallas were absolutely rock bottom, dead last in defense last year. They were shredded through the air by any number of teams. New Orleans set passing records. Even the New York Jets. They were, the Jets, as bad as they were for much of last season. They still had success against Dallas through the air. So I think first and foremost, Rod Marinelli not only has to solidify the back end of the defense, he's obviously got to get the defensive line sorted as well. And if he's got pace across the field, he sees that as just one way in which he can improve that defensive side of the ball.
All right, Richard. Well, that's all good stuff. We're going to have to see what that team does this year because if they can't stop anybody on the defensive side, it doesn't matter what Tony Romo and the offense does. They're not going to win many ball games. One more kind of story coming out of this year's NFL draft. I've already given my take on it, but I'd like to get your take on it. And it's Michael Sam being picked in the seventh round by the St. Louis Rams. A lot of talk after the draft. He was apparently going to do a reality project for the Oprah Winfrey Network. And then I think the NFL kind of pulled the plug on that. What's going on? What was your take on the first openly gay football player being drafted into the NFL?
Well, I think first and foremost, you've got to go back to what Michael Sam said way back in January when this whole story came to light. And he said, look, be judged as a football player. And so what did Jeff Fisher say when he drafted him? He said, we will judge Michael Sam solely on whether he is good enough to make this team in the NFL. And I think, first and foremost, that's got to be the main thing. Now, is it a watershed moment? You bet it is. The first openly gay player to be drafted in American sports. Of course it is. And now, hopefully, people will follow Sam as well. And there won't be such a the hullabaloo that surrounded this kid that's come out of Missouri. But he's the SEC co-defensive player of the year. You look at Barr, the co-defensive player of the year from the SEC. He goes in the first round. So you say, why does Michael Sam drop all the way down to the seventh round? And you look at it and you say, well, he's only 260 pounds, 6'2". He's a little bit undersized as a defensive end. He had a really slow 40 time at the combine, around about 4.9 seconds, I think it was. All these things will count against him, but you put the tape on, and whatever the knock is on the kid, he gets to the quarterback. 10 sacks last year, and I think that's what people will be looking to see if he can do when he steps up to the NFL come training camp. And let's not beat around the bush, you know, at St. Louis Rams, that's one heck of a defensive line that he's got to try and break his way through to get on the roster.
Yeah, but I kind of like what Jeff Fisher said, that they're looking to him to be a tweener. They don't expect him to be an every down player. They want him to come in on pass rushing situations and get to the QB. And if he can do that, you know, let's just watch him play football and forget about what he does behind closed doors, because that's none of our business, really.
Well, let me give you another team that's won two Super Bowls in recent years, the New York Giants. What did they win the Super Bowls based on the running in the playoffs? On rush pass. They didn't have enough rushers in the teams. Michael Sam can step up and prove that he fits in here in St. Louis. Third down situations, pin your ears back, get after the quarterback. And if he can do that, then all power to him. But even if he doesn't make the St. Louis Rams roster, he'll get to play games in preseason. And if he can play well in those, then he's auditioning for a spot on 31 other rosters. Because you better believe that there's going to be GMs, head coaches from 31 other teams in the NFL, all watching, all keen to see how Michael Sam performs in those games. And the other big plus is, now that he's gone to St. Louis Rams, now that he has been drafted, of course, the media storm that surrounded him has somewhat subsided. He's given his press conference. They've made it clear it's now down to football. Whichever team he ends up with, if it's not the St. Louis Rams, this won't be happening again. Those questions have already been answered. So I think he finds himself in a pretty good situation in St. Louis. He went to Missouri, so the folks around that area know all too well about Michael Sam. He'll get to work with one of the best defenses in the NFL, for me, and he can only surely benefit from that.
Well, you know what, Richard? I want to thank you first for coming on the show, but I also want to thank you for saying St. Louis and not St. Louis.
Hey, when in America, you know how it goes.
There you go, buddy. That was Richard Graves, our buddy for the show, Sky Sports News NFL correspondent. Certainly really cool to have Richard Graves join me and talk some football. Guy knows his stuff. But, you know, I'm talking to him about, you know, the Cowboys and Johnny Manziel, of course. The thing is, I was asked recently which first-round player, and more specifically, which top 10 overall pick has to perform immediately. And I would say all of them, of course. I still don't know what the Detroit Lions did taking tight end Eric Ebron from North Carolina with the 10th pick. I thought there were a ton better players on the board. I can't believe they passed on Odell Beckham. If they wanted another offensive weapon, you have wide receiver Odell Beckham on the board from LSU. 5'11", 198, the guy is fast. Probably the second, in my mind, the second wide receiver listed on my board. I know Mike Evans from Texas A&M went before him, but that's because he was big, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were looking for a big wide receiver, and there was no way they were getting Sammy Watkins, especially with the Bills jumping up to the fourth pick overall to take Sammy. But, you know, Odell Beckham would have been a great choice there. for the Detroit Lions at 10. Instead, they decided to go tight end. I'm not sure that the tight end position is what's going to make or break the Detroit Lions. So that was kind of interesting. But if there's one player besides Clowney, who Clowney absolutely positively has to from day one step in for the Houston Texans and be the guy that they believe they got. But for me, I'm looking at the third overall pick, and I'm looking at the Jacksonville Jaguars and Blake Bortles. Because, wow, did that come out of left field. I mean, nobody, and I really mean nobody, and I think it's because the Jacksonville Jaguars kept this a secret for as long as they could possibly keep it a secret. And that was until, boom, when they selected Blake Bortles with the number 3 pick overall, is that they believe he is the best quarterback in the draft. They believe that. Now, they have to be right. And what they're kind of doing is they're saying, well, you know what, Bortles doesn't have to come in immediately. We can let him sit and learn behind Chad Henne. And that's fine and dandy. I'm all for if you have a great starting quarterback who can teach a young guy, go ahead. But the thing is, Henny's pretty young himself. It's not like he's got a whole bunch of starts under his belt. So he's going to be fighting for that starting job. And Blake Bortles, you mean to tell me that the Jacksonville Jaguars took the 3rd pick overall and they don't expect him to perform today? They don't want him to play starting quarterback for Jacksonville this season? That's very interesting. Now, to me, that's where I look. I look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. If they don't start him immediately, then he better pan out later in the future, because you're taking a huge gamble picking somebody that high and not hoping that he is ready to help you this season. Other than that, I think the Atlanta Falcons hit a home run in Jake Matthews. You know, the Matthews family, they're just, you know, they're all kinds of talented. There's a lot of Pro Bowls and all pro players in that family, and I think the Atlanta Falcons just got another one in Jake Matthews from Texas A&M. I think he's going to be pretty good in the league, and he will be around for a long, long time. So that's the other kind of question marks that I have from day one is you got to look at the Miami Dolphins. I just get a sense from the Miami Dolphins that there's no sense of direction of where the team is actually going, where they're going, what are they doing, what are they – expect from their team. And you know, Juwan James, offensive tackle from Tennessee, is rated a lot lower than where the Dolphins snatched him up at 19th overall. Interesting first day for the Denver Broncos as well. They got a quarterback. Look, the Broncos have been making all kinds of offseason moves, and I believe they're poised to come back and represent the AFC again next year in the Super Bowl. So it's going to be interesting to see how that Bradley Roby pick pans out for them. Now it's time to have a little fun and get to some listener questions. And we'll jump on to Facebook and answer your questions. Let's see. Ed Franks. Ed, how you doing, buddy? Big time listener to the show. Ed asks, how do you feel about Dallas passing on Manziel? Well, I think I've been pretty loud and clear and maybe even loud and obnoxious about that point about the Dallas Cowboys passing on Manziel. I think there's going to be a lot of teams that after Johnny Manziel starts to play football for the Cleveland Browns, if he even plays half of how I think he could play football, there's going to be a lot of teams saying, man, we passed on that guy? That's the guy that we just let slide down all the way to the Cleveland Browns. We'll see. But I think he's got that it. He may not be the fastest guy, the strongest guy, the biggest guy, but he's got it. And that it is winning football. And when people say, well, Steven, you used to say that, you know, Tim Tebow, you know, wasn't like that. And he had it. But Tim Tebow couldn't throw a football. Johnny Manziel can throw a football. There's the difference right there. So it's not that I'm saying, you know, anything bad about Tim Tebow. Well, I kind of am. But he couldn't throw a football. He really couldn't. And you know, some of the mechanics that people were complaining about Johnny Manziel, I think he's worked them out. He looked really sharp at his pro day. And Dallas passing on him just it kind of hurt, you know, just because I kind of like that team a little bit. It's not that I'm a big fan or anything. I like the team, so it's going to be interesting. I really cannot believe that they passed on him. Next question from James Reese. Michael Sam lasting all the way to the seventh round. Any thoughts? Well, yeah, I've got some thoughts. I think Richard and I just kind of talked about it a little bit as well. But first of all, he was never going to be taken before the sixth round. I thought people who wanted him to go earlier didn't know much about the player size, didn't know much about the player himself. But I thought he would go a little bit sooner in the seventh round. I thought late sixth, early seventh. The fact of the matter is Michael Sam was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. You don't become the Defensive Player of the Year in the SEC if you cannot play football. I don't care what the man does behind closed doors with whoever it is he does it with. All I care about is can he play football? And I believed, watching tape on Michael Sam, he can play football. Now, in the NFL, where guys are a little bit bigger, I'm not sure he can play football all the time. He's not a three-down, rush the quarterback kind of guy. But passing situations, you bring him in off the bench, you tell him to get after the quarterback, he could absolutely do it. So I was expecting him to get drafted. I knew that he would get drafted. I didn't think it would be that late. But the fact that he got drafted at all was a good thing. And, you know, everything that's kind of happened afterwards, the Oprah Winfrey Network thing, and he was going to do a docuseries, and the NFL pulled the plug, and that's all fine. I don't think he needs that. I think right now he needs to focus and be the best football player you can be. And I like what the St. Louis Rams are doing. They gave one day. They said one day, all the press, come talk to him. He can have a press conference. You can ask him anything you want to. But after that, it's business as usual, and it's all about football. And I like that the Rams are doing that, because all now Michael Sam has to worry about is playing football and trying to make the football team. Because if he can make a football team, as Richard said, it doesn't have to be for the St. Louis Rams. It could be for another team. He is going to be seen as whether he can be a professional football player or not. Nobody, I think, at this point forward in the league cares about what he came out and announced that he was gay. I don't think they care about that anymore. They care about can he play football. And that's what he's going to be being judged on. I don't have any problems that he lasted to the seventh round. Like I said, I didn't think it was going to be drafted until late sixth. Took a little longer than I anticipated, but I'm very happy for Michael that he got drafted. Ollie Iverson. I'm talking about the basketball player. Speaking of basketball, the Spurs. What a whooping. Oh, they put on the Thunder, Oklahoma. Woo, that's a whooping right there. 35-point victory tonight. They now lead the series 2-0. So no more Iverson talk. Ollie Iveson asks, will Cleveland get away with their shocking treatment of Johnny? But seriously, will they be able to resist sitting him at all? Well, I've already, you know, mentioned on the show, don't sit him. Play him. He is what you need in Cleveland to give you a spark. So I think they should play him. I think right now it's all for show, man. It's all for show. It's early in the offseason. But I think once training camps get going, they will give him a chance to win the job. And I believe that he will do it. As a matter of fact, I guaranteed it already. So there you go. Oh, this just in. Godzilla's really good, by the way. You should go watch it. Ben DeBono asks, will Steven and Jeff brave our bitter winters in Minnesota to come to Super Bowl 52? Well, this just in. I guess this is news. It's not breaking news because it happened a little earlier in the week. But Minnesota. Yes, that's right. The Minnesota Vikings and Commissioner Roger Goodell announced that Minnesota will host Super Bowl 52. They went up against New Orleans and Indianapolis. They were the other finalists. But Minnesota wins, and they will get to host Super Bowl 42. I'm not sure. Look, we just narrowly averted a winter storm at last year's Super Bowl. Okay, I was there. The day after the Super Bowl, it was awful. Awful, awful. My flight was delayed like 4.5 hours. I almost didn't make it home. I don't want to go through that again. I want to go through to where it's nice and warm and maybe there's a beach and I could go to the beach. Yeah, I don't want to go to the beach. I don't want to wear shorts. Well, maybe by then. Yeah, maybe by then I want to go to the beach because I'm actually working out a little bit. Ooh, pumping up. But that's neither here nor there. That's beside the point. The point is, why are they insisting on going to cold weather venues? I know that by then the Minnesota Vikings are going to have a nice, beautiful new facility and it's going to be awesome. But I think maybe this is what the NFL is doing. It's kind of like saying, hey, look, you build your team a new stadium and we'll give you a Super Bowl. I mean, it kind of looks that way a little bit. Don't you think? I mean, if you think, here are the next Super Bowls, right? This year, 2015, Super Bowl 49 is in Arizona, Glendale, Arizona. That's a fairly new stadium. Super Bowl 50, the big L. 2016 is in Santa Clara, California. The San Francisco 49ers new facility, which opens this year. It'll be in its second year, which is the qualifications for the stadium. Boom, it'll be there. 2017, Super Bowl 51 will be in Houston Texans, Reliance Stadium. That's a fairly new stadium as well. And then 52, boom, Minnesota. The Vikings will be in their second year there in that stadium. It's like they're saying, San Diego, hey, you know, build a new stadium. We'll give you a Super Bowl because we're sure as heck not giving you a Super Bowl if we have to go and play in Qualcomm because that stadium is ancient and it might fall on people. Seriously, build a new one. Maybe that's what the NFL is trying to, the message is trying to convey. I'm not sure. But congratulations to the Minnesota Vikings. As long as it's covered and there's a roof and I can be indoors and not have to worry about my little itty-bitty piggy having to freeze, then I will be okay. So that's all I've got to say about that, really. And finally, I will leave you with this point before I close up shop for episode 10.02. I want to let you all know I'm doing a new fan segment that I want to do here in the next few weeks called The Fans Take. And I'm looking for individuals who want to be the representative fan for their favorite team. So your favorite team is the Miami Dolphins. You think you are a great fan of the Miami Dolphins and you want to join me from time to time talking about the Miami Dolphins and some of the moves and stuff that they make or any news happening with that team. I want to hear from you. Send me an email, steven@rarn.net. I want to have a cool little kind of like around the league segment where I get four or five of you every week to just come in and do a couple minutes about what's going on with your team. I think it'll be interesting to get everyone else's take on their team. So once again, steven@rarn.net. If you're interested in being the fan for your team for the Fans Take. Finally, thanks for listening. Want to keep bringing you the best shows possible. I've reached out to all the teams playing in London this year, and I hope to have some of the players from those teams join me in the upcoming weeks. I know Jacksonville's already keen to have some players come on the show, so keep listening. I hope it only gets better. I hope it's still entertaining. I hope that you found my Godzilla sound as funny as I find it, because Godzilla's pretty cool. So keep listening. Thanks again. If you're not following the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, get on it, people. Just get on it. Get on social media, and you can find all the social media handles if you just go to the website, www.nflrnr.com. I'm Steven Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.